Well, tonight brings us to the conclusion of our Mark series, our 9 weeks in the snapshots of Mark. And Mark's one of those Gospels that have been really good to dive into. And I've loved I've loved looking at it myself and finding out new things. And hopefully that it's been great for you guys as you made this journey with us with that sort of stuff. Tonight we're going to be touching on something that battles with us all. And will happen to us once in a lifetime, sometimes more times, and sometimes we all struggle with it all the time. And it's a really good way to look at how Jesus deals with this sort of stuff. But so you know, I want to open up with just something else and go from there. And I wanted to ask a question. And when you were younger, did you use excuses to get out of doing things? I think we've all done, and working at a school, I hear some wonderful excuses from students trying to get out of homework. And we actually had, a couple of weeks ago, we had one of those conversations around the staff room about this sort of topic, because a Year 7 boy used a wonderful excuse to try and get out of doing some homework. And so he had this thing that was due in that day, and obviously he hadn't spent the time that he wanted to on it, and the teacher asked for it, and he said, well, where's your homework? And little Johnny said, oh, well, I haven't been able to do my homework. I've been tending to my crops all night. And the teacher said, what, you don't own a farm. You don't look at that sort of stuff there. He goes, no, nothing like that. I was on Farm Bill all night. I couldn't do my homework because I had to look at this. And so obviously that excuse didn't work. And so it started this conversation about some of the legitimate or some of the excuses that they had when their time in teaching. Some was at the school at where I'm working at. Not too sure I should mention it, but the camera there, but Melbourne College. But some was outside of that, and some was overseas as well. So we had a little bit of a conversation around the staff room about some of the excuses that they had heard from students and trying to get out of homework. And so here was some of the ones that was shared with us that day. So one boy said, I couldn't do my homework last night because Dad and his friends were having a Call of Duty LAN party and I didn't have a computer to work on. And then we had a test, he said, this little Year 7 didn't really know what was going on. And I'm not picking on Year 7s, but they're the ones who mainly come up with try these excuses. But he said, I can't use my calculator today for the test because it is solar powered and it's raining outside and the sun's not out. Unfortunately, it did work still, so he still couldn't use it. And an older student said, I couldn't hand in my homework last night because I was mugged last night. And I begged, it sounded plausible because he had a few bruises and something like that, but that was from football, we found out afterwards. But what it broke himself down was he said, the guy, I begged him not to keep my USB, but then he insisted on taking it, yelling at, he must have some classified information, so I'm going to use it to sell it. And so that's what the boy said. And so once he said that, we obviously knew it was a bit of a fake. And as they get older, they come up with more elaborate schemes, which is kind of cool. And this one was, I used to steal Wi-Fi from my next-door neighbour's internet, but they put a code on it, so I couldn't email it my assignment to you. So I used that excuse. And the last one was actually one he got away with, and they showed the picture to be leaving. He said, my brother was playing with his new crossbow and put an arrow through my monitor. And he actually had a photo of a monitor with an arrow at his home. So unfortunately for that boy, he was able to get away with doing his homework for one night. But that's it. And the other day, when a girl came to my office who had desperate measures to try and miss a sack she had first period. So she made up an elaborate excuse not to come, and her parents bought it, and so she didn't come to class that first period. But lo and behold, she got her information wrong, and the sack wasn't the first period, it was the last period. So she rocked up to school, thinking that she got out of doing it, but then obviously quickly realised that it was last period, and she still had to do this test. Now, it didn't take her long before fear engulfed her. And she actually came to my office with 2 periods to go and said, distraught and in tears, and said, I can't do this. I can't do it. There's one reason why I can't do this, because I haven't just prepared and I just don't know what to do. And for this girl, it was real because she was in tears. She was distraught by it. And the fear of actually doing this test overwhelmed her to the point where she couldn't do it. And she was actually making herself ill because of it. Now, she didn't get out of doing it, but to her, the fear of doing it was actually real. Testophobia, apparently it's called, and it's actually the fear of doing tests, exams, is real for some people. And it brings that fear of not being able to do something and not having control over something that happens. And so for her, she had this moment, this panic attack moment, this real moment where she couldn't control what was going to happen and she didn't know what to do. So her only response was to go inside herself and be really upset and nervous about it. And for us, sometimes in our lives, there's been times when that's happened to us. When we've had to face something that we don't know what it is or we don't want to face it, and we maybe not had the same experiences that girl did, but we've had similar experiences. We just don't want to face it. We don't know how to get on with it. We don't know what to do. We're just really upset and we don't know what to do. And it could have been like illnesses. It could have been tests. It could have been interviews. It could have been something in our lives which we didn't want to confront. We might have been talking to someone that we knew that we had a bad conversation with. And it might have been something that we didn't want to do. We know we had to do it, but for us, it's causing us more pain and grief than ever before. And sometimes, if you're like me, we worry more about the future and about things we can't change than stuff we can actually change. And it's comforting for me to know that Jesus felt the same way sometimes. That Jesus had this moment inside of him where he was dealing with this sort of fear and pain and agony himself. Not to the same level as we did, and it was totally different for him, but it's good to know that. And I want to get to the Bible reading that we're talking about today, and hopefully I can get my little thing to work. Hey, excellent. Mark 14, 32 to 42. It's a bit small, but I'll read it out as well. It says, they went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to his disciples, sit here while I pray. He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death, he said to them. Stay here and keep watch. Going a little farther, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible the hour might pass from him. Abba, Father, he said, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not my will, but your will, but what you will. Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Simon, he said to Peter, are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Once more, he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back, he found them sleeping again because their eyes were very heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning a third time, he said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? Enough, the hour has come. Look, the Son of Man delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer. And so, in Mark's version of events, and I'll get back to that one, it happened at a place called the Gardens of Gethsemane. In other places, it was like the foot of Mount of Olives. And so for this time, Jesus used to use this place as a bit of a refuge. In Luke chapter 21, verse 37, it says, each day Jesus was teaching at the temple, and each evening he went out and spent the night on the hill called the Mount of Olives. And the people came early in the morning to hear him at the temple. So Jesus used to use this space as a bit of a refuge for him. A bit of a time to get away from it all and spend with God. So it has a bit of history. So I want to walk through this place. I want to walk through what happened to him. So 2 weeks ago, when Ian spoke to us, they finished their meal. They finished the Last Supper. And they walked out. They might have been singing a hymn. But as they were walking out, Jesus obviously feels a bit distressed. And so they walk along. He says to all his disciples, he says, I'm going to have some time alone with God. I'm going to pray. He asks the eight of them. He says, wait here. He asks the other ones, the three of them, James, John, and Peter, he says, come a little bit further with me. Now, these three were special friends of Jesus, however you want to put it. His closer disciples, If we look at our own lives, we've got lots of friends, but we have some that are closer than others and some that we relate more to. These were the three that Jesus related to a little bit more. And for Jesus, for these three, these are the three that he took for the transfiguration. And so he had a special bond with these three, as we all do with other people in our lives. So Jesus says, he takes them along and says, look, he opens up a little bit more to them. Because my heart is bleeding, guys. Sit here and watch for me. Sit here and pray with me. And I'm going to sit up here and pray. And then it says, Jesus wrestles with him and says, take my cup away. And I'll just tackle that a little bit before we get into what he actually says beforehand. And as I said, a few weeks back, Ian came and explained about that fourth cup. So if you haven't looked at it, go back online 2 weeks ago when Ian was talking about the communion, and he'll look into the whole four cups of the Jewish Passover, and the fourth cup was left there. But it was a cup of acceptance. And he's saying, take this cup away. Take the suffering away. But then he accepts it. He says, your will, not my will. So he accepts the suffering and he accepts the pain into that. But before that, Jesus knows what's going on. Jesus knows what happened has to happen in the next 24 hours. He's going to suffer for the sins of everyone. And here he has a very human moment that we all have. In that moment, he's wrestling with the task of what he has to do, but he doesn't want it to happen. Or he's complaining to God, or he's wrestling with God to say, hey, does this really have to happen this way? Is there another way? See, Jesus knew what was going to happen. He'd been telling everyone what was going to happen. He's been telling, I'm going to die. Now, I'm going to be risen again. These people are going to persecute me. You're going to get persecuted as well. So Jesus knew what was going to happen, but reality is setting foot now. It's that night beforehand. And he's saying, no, I don't want this to happen. I don't want this to happen. Is there another way, God? He's still thinking about it. It's still upsetting him. He's crying out to God, surely there is another way. But I want us to think about what we do use prayer for and what prayer is often thought for. In modern circles, prayer is often thought like a wish list. Like, geez, Lord, can I pray that I'll get a good mark on this test? Or can I pray that I'll get a new car or be in a relationship? But Jesus' prayer like that sort of time wasn't about that. See, why is he praying to God if he knew that he was going to deny his request? Or if he knew he was going to say no? And it wasn't to change his destiny on the cross. So why is Jesus praying to God? Because Jesus knew that prayer isn't always about changing circumstances or fixing our problems. Sometimes prayer is about laying hold of God, laying hold of his strength and his comfort and his willing to our lives. See, Jesus was crying out for God to comfort him and to be with him. He knew what he had to do, and it didn't make him feel any better than what he is now, but he had the emotion that he wanted to get out. He wanted that release of just crying out and saying, hey, God, I've had enough of this. See, I want us to notice the words in here. So he took Peter and James and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. My soul is overwhelmed with a sorrow to the point of death, he said to them. That's how much Jesus is feeling right now. It's not like, yeah, I know what I'm going to do, guys. This is what I'm going to do. He's really feeling it. He's really feeling that pain and the agony now. Now, that is real. I'm deeply grieved, or I'm deeply distressed, in some translations. Jesus didn't have to say that. He didn't have to confide to his other people. He didn't have to confide to God. But he wanted to get it out. He wanted that release to say, hey. See, in Western society, especially in our culture, we are taught to keep everything into ourselves. We're taught to deal with our feelings ourselves. Now, even in church circles, we come to church, and even if we've had a bad week or a bad month, we put on a happy face and say, hey, yeah, everything's okay. Everything's fine. And sometimes our prayer life's like that as well. We just go through the motions of our prayer life. We don't really think about it. We just go through and say, hey, yeah, God, I pray for this. I pray for my friends. I pray for my family. And then I've got this little problem inside of me. Yeah, you can deal with it. But we're not really as honest as we should be sometimes. And see, here Jesus is saying, I'm deeply grieved. I'm deeply distressed. My soul is overwhelmed to the point of death. He's getting real. He's not holding back anything now. He's letting know how he's feeling. See, sometimes we can't suppress our feelings. Sometimes we need to let it get it out. There's that thought in the world and in some Christian circles that you can't be angry at God. And we discussed this before when we talked about, last year in Job and Jonah, that it's okay to be angry with God sometimes. We can't suppress our feelings. Anger is an emotion that is created by God, which is inside us. I don't think there is anyone in the world that has said they haven't been angry at one stage in their life, at something or someone. The problem with anger is that sometimes it consumes us and overwhelms us and overtakes us. And that's our first point of call. And we don't deal with it. That's when it becomes a problem. So I have to ask a question. It's okay to be angry sometimes. It's okay to be angry with God. It's okay to be frustrated with yourself sometimes. Frustrated with the situations, but don't let it dwell. Don't let it consume you. Don't let it overtake you to do that. See, we can do something about it. We can put it in God's hands when that happens to us. We can let it release us. There's a story about a pastor named Bob Surge, whose vocal cord was permanently damaged in his throat, leaving him with a remnant of a voice that hurt him even if he tried to whisper. A terrible tragedy for anyone, but because he used his voice for a job, it hurt him even more. How can he preach a sermon without his voice? For years followed, Serge learned firsthand about suffering. But how did he deal with his suffering? Oddly enough, Bob Surge found comfort from God by being honest with God. He realized that he couldn't really deal with the problem by simply ignoring it. Honesty was his release valve. You know, for yourselves, and therapists have understood this for a long time, they will often spend time in sessions with troubled patients trying to get them to be honest about their feelings and emotions. Now, my time as a chaplain in a public school is exactly that sometimes. I say to anyone who comes into my office, be real to me, be honest with me, don't hold back. You can call me whatever you want to call me, and sometimes they do. It's okay, but it's better that they do that because they can be real and authentic. They can say, hey, no, this sucks. I hate this, what's going on here. And sometimes that initial just release of that has a weight off their shoulders because of that. And this is what Jesus is doing here. Sometimes prayer isn't asking for God to do something. Sometimes prayer is letting know God how we feel. And so this is a great little thing that I found. Sometimes God stills the storms of the sea. At other times, he stills the storms within me. And so sometimes prayer isn't about asking him to change something. It's about, hey, God, give me peace. Give me calm. Show that you're working within me. Show me that you're with me. Show me that you're holding me, that you're comforting me. As that last bracket of songs was so great at doing, let me breathe in, let me breathe out. Be here with me. Let me rest in you. Prayer is that. Prayer is sharing with God how you're feeling. See, I know for some people here, the harsh reality is that we are facing things and you guys are facing things that you can't deal with. And that you struggle with that on a daily basis. And that sometimes you think, hey, no, it's tough. But here he's saying that Jesus is saying, release that valve. Give it up to God. God can handle what you have to say with him. He will comfort you. He will be that rest with you. See, in Mark's account, what we talked about then, Jesus did it three times. He didn't do it once and say, okay, now I pray, now we can go out and have a last drink before we go out and I'd hang on a cross for a little bit of time. He doesn't say that. He says, no, 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 the first time, I'm still distressed. I'm going to go up there a second time. The second time he comes back, they're still sleeping. He doesn't even bother to disturb them again. He goes up a third time and says, no, 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 I need to spend some time with God again. My heart is still grieved. My heart is still troubled. For some of us, we battle with it for a short period of time. For some of it, what we're going to battle with is going to be with us for the rest of our lives. But to me, it is comforting to know that we have a God that will be there for us. And we can rest in him as Jesus had rested in him this time. See, how many times do we try and deal with ourselves, the things that we cannot change? If you're anything like me, it's too many times. But here is a passage that says, hey, Jesus wrestled with it. And Jesus said, hey, God, take it from me. I know I have to face through this. I know I have to do this. I know there's going to be a trouble with it. But help me out. Walk with me. Be that step with me. See, we need to release our pain and our anger into the arms of God. Some of us are really good, and we have got people around us that can be like that. And I recommend that you have find people that you can do that with. That you can find some Christian friends that will say, hey, look, I need to use you every now and again to be a bit angry at. And it's nothing personal, but I just need this release valve every now and again. So it'd be good to find that. But if you can't do that, it is comforting to me as a Christian to know that God is that person for me. That I don't have to hold anything back. That if I'm going through something bad, I can say, God, this sucks. And he understands. And he's holding me. And he's having me in his arms, saying, it's okay, Chris. You can do this together. So I want to close in prayer now. Dear Heavenly Father, this life is tough. You said in so many parts of the Bible that it's not going to be an easy journey. And when we become a Christian, it doesn't get any easier. We just have someone to walk with us. And there are things in our lives that we might be facing now that we just cannot change. And we need your help with there, Lord. Lord, let us take rest. Lord, let us take refuge as Jesus did that night. And just be with you in that. Lord, help us to find the people around us or to be that person that people come to when we can do that. But Lord, if we're feeling anything at the moment, let us rest in your arms. Let us rest by your side. And let us be comforted by the fact that Jesus did this too. Just pray these things in your name. Amen.